Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Molly Goodfellow.
And I'm Georgia McAndrew. On this podcast, we dig into the lives of all the women the patriarchy left out of our education. Classic.
This week on the podcast, we are talking about Junko Tobai, the Japanese mountaineer who blazed a trail for women in the world of mountain climbing everywhere.
I respect this because I don't think I've actually climbed any mountains.
But do you like walking?
No.
You don't like walking?
I don't. See, when people say, let's go for a walk, I'm like, no.
I adore to walk.
Okay.
I think there's something very Elizabeth Bennet about going for a walk.
Yes,
it's very Jane Austen. Okay, let's get climbing.
Please.
Junko Tobai was born Junko Ishibashi on September 22nd, 1939, in a town called Maharumachi in Fukushima, Japan. Junko was the fifth daughter of seven children, so she grew up in a very busy household. She was also considered quite a weak and frail child due to many bouts of childhood pneumonia, certainly not the sort of child that would become the mountaineer that she did. Her love for climbing began when she was 10 years old on a class climbing trip to Nasu Park to hike Mount Chasu. Mount Chasu sits amongst a group of peaks in Nikko National Park and is one of the region's most active volcanoes. With her teachers in class, she climbed Mount Asahi and Mount Chaosu in Nasu Park. Asahi is about 6,233 feet tall, and Chaosu is 6,365 feet tall. For comparison, the Eiffel Tower is like 984 feet, to give context. So these are some big boy mountains.
I was going to say, I need a reference point because feet
like
means nothing to me.
In my head, I can't imagine what feet is. You'll be like, that's 50 feet, when I'm like, sure, okay, fine. It was this school trip that really sparked her love for climbing. She loved climbing so much, saying that she enjoyed the beautiful landscapes of climbing and the non-competitive energy of it compared to other sports. Junko wanted to do more climbing after enjoying her school trip, but unfortunately her parents didn't have enough money for her to pursue it. Junko was one of seven kids, and climbing is an expensive hobby, from equipment to travel expenses. Plus, at this point, Japan was dealing with the aftermath of World War II, so money was indeed scarce. Could you be one of seven kids?
No, I would hate it.
That's too many children in one house.
I'm also the baby of my family.
Me too.
And I love it. And I'm the only girl.
I'm also the only girl.
I love it so much.
I need to be baby.
Yeah, at all times.
I can't deal with competition.
I got an injection yesterday and my mum phoned me and she was like, you're so brave. I was like, I am. Actually, mum, I'm so brave. I'm 26, but I'm so brave.
I had a problem with my car last week and the first thing I did was text my mum to be like, can you call the mechanic for me? Because I'm too scared. I'm 30 years old.
Yeah. Do you know what? I love it.
Even if I was the baby of seven, that's still a lot of people. That's still quite a hierarchy that I don't want to fight in.
But I respect her wanting to take on a sport, though, at a young age.
I feel like the idea that I would have done a sport in school and it would have inspired me to change my entire life, not relatable. I had a very bad time with sports in school. Oh. Not like horrendous, but just, I don't know whether you had a similar thing in your school where there was like boy sports, girl sports, and then the mixed ability team. And I was in the mixed ability team, which basically they didn't care if you lived or died. Like, they were like, do something. Just walk around this exercise hall, I guess. As long as you're moving, we're happy.
I do think high school PE, feral.
I think it either makes you or breaks you as a person.
It does.
And I think for far too many people in the UK, it broke them, me included. As we can probably imagine, being an adventurer climber wasn't considered a proper career for a young Japanese woman, or probably many women at this time. Mountaineering as a sports thing was only really happening from about the 1800s onwards in alpine countries like Switzerland, France and Italy. So Junko decided to study to become a teacher. A career considered appropriate for a woman of her age and status. In 1958, she enrolled in the Showa Women's University in Tokyo. When she graduated in 1962, she decided to try and get into her true love of climbing by looking into local climbing clubs. She joined several clubs, but these were primarily clubs for men. Of the climbing clubs, Junko said, "Some of the men wouldn't climb with me, but a few older ones were more supportive. Some thought I was there to meet men, but I was only interested in climbing."
The point about her being there to meet men is just like so reductive, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
you're a woman. You possibly couldn't be here just to enjoy the beautiful mountainside.
Yeah, but I do also feel like a hypocrite because I definitely
have joined things to meet men.
I definitely would take up an entire hobby just if there was one man that I liked that was interested.
I was having this conversation with my friends recently. I said, you've got to join a running club. Apparently that's where everyone's meeting these days.
Like, also, like, if a man, she also does like running. If a man says that he likes a band, I'm 100% going to that Wikipedia page. Mm. I mean, I love the drummer. This man's name.
Yeah. I also loved that cover that they did.
I loved that second album. Mm. It didn't take Junko long to become an accomplished climber, and soon she would have scaled all of Japan's major peaks. This included the iconic Mount Fuji, which is about 12,000 feet tall, about double the height of the mountains she climbed when she was a child. So that's like 12 Eiffel Towers.
I'll be honest with you, Molly, you could have said anything there and I would have said, that sounds right to me.
And that's women supporting women.
And that is women supporting women.
In 1965, she met Masanobu Tabai, a fellow intrepid climber, and they married when Junko was 27 years old. It was another sort of rebellion for Junko, as her mother didn't approve of Masanobu because he wasn't a college graduate.
A bad boy, get it, Junko.
Uneducated. We love it. In 1969, Junko set up her own climbing club, the Yoshii Tohan Club, a mountaineering club for women. It was the only one of its kind in Japan at that time. It was for women like Junko, who wanted to climb the biggest peaks but were perhaps held back by finances and work.
I really respect that I'm going to make my own club.
Yeah.
But it's just so disappointing when it's always the women that have to do it.
In a former life, I worked as a journalist, and one year there were these press awards that came out, and the nominations were hugely favoured by men. Like, there were whole categories that were all men. And so me and like four other journalist women, like, this was maybe 6 weeks before their awards were happening. We were like, should we just do our own awards for women? And in 6 weeks, we like turned it around and did this whole award just for women. And we were just like, oh, thank you guys.
Yeah.
It's you. If you actually put your mind to it, it is easy, and you can find women journalists to nominate for awards.
Mm, it's not that hard, guys.
Who knew? The next year, Junko and the group were determined that they were ready to climb Annapurna 3, a mountain in Nepal that clocks in at a huge 24,787 feet. That's so many Eiffel Towers. Junko was in charge of the trip, a huge undertaking for her, but she was excited about the challenge. It was the first time she would ever leave Japan, so it was daunting as well. The group reached the summit of Annapurna 3 on 19th of May 1970, and it was a climb that changed Junko in many ways. Mostly because it was a success. She had proven herself as a skilled and capable climber. She no longer cared what people thought about her and her climbing, particularly other men in the climbing circle. In an interview with writer Robert Horne, she said, if people want to call me the crazy mountain woman, that's okay.
Why is she crazy for wanting to climb mountains?
I don't know. I feel like if women want to do anything, they're crazy. But I do love that her achievements helped her just stop caring what people think.
Yeah, I think she kind of like empowered herself. She clearly wasn't going to get it anywhere else. So she was like, I'll make my own women's climbing club and we'll climb loads of peaks and you can just watch me do it.
I'm going to make my own club, going to climb my own mountains, and I'm just simply not going to care. With Annapurna under their belt, Junko had her eyes on the next adventure, Mount Everest. According to records, the first person to climb Mount Everest was a man named Edmund Hillary and a Tibetan tour guide called Tenzing Norgay in 1953. Since then, it's estimated over 330 people have died on the mountain, with as many as 200 bodies lost to the snowy landscape. It's no wonder that the mountain has a notorious reputation.
Would you ever climb Mount Everest?
I had a friend who tried, and then I think
really?
she got up to a certain point, and then weather conditions meant that they couldn't go any further.
Mm. That would be really annoying, though.
Especially if you wanted to. Like, if it was me, I'd be like, no.
No, I've got it.
Oh, God.
I really wanted to get to the top.
Well, I guess we'll have to go back to the hotel that you paid for.
Yeah.
Oh, room service.
But like Junko, though, you'd probably only be doing it to meet a man, so.
Oh, yeah. Everything I do is to meet a man. I was very disappointed when you told me my co-host would be you.
You're like, what?
Another podcast I've started to meet a man and I haven't.
Damn it.
To climb Mount Everest, you needed to apply to the Nepalese government. Junko and the group applied in 1971 and were scheduled in to climb in 1975. Like the smart woman she was, Junko used that time to raise money and get sponsorship for the group, because as we know, climbing is an expensive practice. Though many weren't too keen to sponsor a woman to climb Everest, she eventually managed to secure sponsorship from some members of the Japanese media, a television network, and newspaper. While she was waiting to climb Everest, she also gave birth to her first child. In 1972, she had a daughter called Noriko. 3 years later, Junko and her group would climb Mount Everest, but it wouldn't go without a hitch. In May 1975, they began to climb. They used the same route as Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay, and were accompanied by six Sherpas to help them along the way. On the 4th of May, the group had reached their camp at 20,000 feet when an avalanche happened, causing snow to cascade down the mountain at frightening speeds, burying Junko and four of her fellow climbers in the snow. Amazingly, no one was really hurt by the avalanche, just a bit battered and bruised and probably psychologically freaked out. One thing is for sure. It's probably psychologically
trauma.
Damaged.
Probably. I think you would be.
We'll never know.
Some like PTSD, I reckon.
Yeah, I'd find it stressful.
Mm.
One thing is for sure, avalanche or not, nothing was going to stop Junko, who spent a few days convalescing on the mountain and then returned to the climb. And then the mountain throws the group another curveball. Altitude sickness. Altitude sickness symptoms include dizziness, exhaustion, lack of sleep, loss of appetite and sickness. With several of the team coming down with altitude sickness, only one person would be able to travel to the top of Everest for them to meet the correct ratio of Sherpas and oxygen tanks to climbers. The group voted that Junko be the one to finish the climb. 12 days after the avalanche that could have killed her, on May 16, 1975, she became the first woman to climb Mount Everest, and she was even praised by the King of Nepal and the Japanese government. Junko felt slightly uncomfortable with the level of fame. She just wanted to be a climber. In fact, she sort of threw off the label of first woman to climb Everest. She just wanted to be known as the 36th person to climb the mountain.
I mean, even if she is throwing off the whole first woman thing, I do think what an incredible...
Yeah.
I don't even know what the word is.
Achievement. I think incredible... And also, obviously, we weren't there on the mountain and so we won't know, but I think it says a lot that her fellow climbers wanted her to go up and finish it. I think that says a lot about her as a leader and how grateful they must have been that she set up the climbing club.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, the fact that it was a group of women and it came down to that only one person could complete, you just know that it would be such a gracious conversation.
Oh my God, yeah.
If it was men, they'd be fighting to the death up there.
It would,
they'd
and
be
also,
throwing
it would
each other
be
off
such,
the mountain.
I also feel like it would be such a level of bravado where even if there were men that felt the altitude sickness, they'd be like, no, I can do it. I can push on. I can make it. Whereas I feel like this energy gives more like the girls in the bathroom at the club where they're like, no, sweetie, you do it.
Yeah.
You've worked so hard, babe.
Go for it, babe.
Like, no, please, have my shot. My baby Guinness. Yeah. And then get up there. You've earned it.
Yes.
I love this.
So right.
Love this for you.
Club energy on
that's,
the top of
I mean,
the
obviously we weren't there, so we can't say how the conversation went, but that's what I like to imagine in my mind.
Me too. Again, we would be the people be like, on you go, Junko.
I would bow up out. And me, I'd be like, I'll take this one for the team. I'll go back to the hotel.
But to be clear, Junko, I'm doing this for you.
I'm doing this only so that you may succeed.
Yeah. It's a purely altruistic decision
I'm making. I'll get the next one.
Yeah.
I'll get the
catch
next
the helicopter,
mountain.
Dad.
Yeah.
We'll see you in a week.
I'll have a drink for you waiting at the bar. After Everest, Junko continued her climbing career and would become the first woman to climb the highest peaks on every continent, otherwise known as the Seven Summits. It was a personal goal of hers to climb the highest mountain in every country of the world, and by the end of her life, she had climbed at least 70 of these mountains.
Wow.
Also, in 1978, she had her second child, a son called Shinya. She really, truly was having it all, as they say.
As they say.
In 2012, Junko was unfortunately diagnosed with stomach cancer, but she continued to climb throughout her illness. She even led a youth group expedition in a climb up Mount Fuji. She died in October 2016. She is hugely lauded as a successful climber and adventurer in her own right and as a woman, even though she might not have wanted that. Before she died, an asteroid was named after her, and in 2019, a mountain range discovered on Pluto was named after her.
I love it.
I think that's really nice.
It's really, really nice.
I think that's a really nice story.
I think, like, sport with women in history is so interesting because it's all quite, like, recent that women have actually had, like, full access to it. And even this year at the Olympics, it's the first year of gender parity. Like, we're in 2024. And she is just out there doing it.
Yeah. And I think what's really nice about stories like this, and I think we've seen it similarly in the last few years with, like, women's football, for example, is... I don't know whether it's specific to women, but I feel like women really respond to seeing themselves in the media and like the idea that a little girl might see Junko climbing a mountain and then think, oh, that's something that I can do too. It's really special.
You said that she took a youth group like up Mount Fuji and it's like this full
even when
circle
she was
moment.
Like, even when she had cancer, which I think is, it really just goes to show how much she loved climbing and how much she obviously wanted to pass that on to other people and generations as well.
I was looking at... other women climbers and kind of like the history of it, they straight up used to make women climb mountains in dresses.
I mean, the feminist part of me wants to say horrible, disgusting, but the like fashion lover of me is like, oh, shake. Is that a move? Like, is that?
Which is so impractical.
Especially, like, I don't know what kind of period you're talking about, but presumably like corsets and huge skirts era.
Let me just consult my notes. Yes, 1871, Lucy Walker was the first woman in Europe to climb the Matterhorn in the Alps.
I feel like if you were corseted up, you would 100%, once you reached a certain height, you're fainting.
Yeah, the altitude sickness.
Like a mountain goat, you're just like, oh, gone.
It wouldn't work.
And also you get so sweaty.
Oh my God, it'd be so...
It'd be so sweaty. The chafe. The thigh chafe.
Oh God,
the thigh chafe.
Oh God, the chafe.
They probably don't have like... You can't roll a deodorant your thighs back then.
I guess they used to have those little like... What were they
pantaloons.
Called? Pantaloons, yeah. But I mean, I don't know. Could you get thigh chafe in pantaloons? Let us know.
I suppose pantaloons were like the early equivalent of like the chub rub shorts.
Chub rub shorts. I couldn't live without my chub rub shorts.
My little cycling shorts for summer.
The best.
Should we do like a history gap expedition?
We could, yeah.
Two cans of G&T in our backpacks.
Oh my gosh.
See you at the top.
The perfect hydration. I'm sure Junko would agree.
You've been listening to History Gap with me, Molly Goodfellow.
And me, Georgia McAndrew. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe. And you can also leave us a review if you'd like.
Keep an eye on our socials, at History Gap on Instagram and TikTok, at History Gap Pod on Twitter.
See you next time.
Bye.